Board. Historians William Lauren Katz and Gerald Horn, Judge Margaret Burnham, publisher Esther Jackson, and close friend and Robeson confidant Lloyd Brown.
All these extraordinary guests will be part of this historic centennial anniversary of Paul Robeson. That's Sunday, April 5th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. For ticket information, call WBAI at area code 212-279-0707, extension 132 or 146.
That's 212-279-0707, extension 132 or 146.
Little David was a shepherd boy. He killed Goliath and he shouted for joy. Little David, play on your harp.
Hi, everybody. This is Angelique Kidjo. Whenever I'm in New York, I listen to Bernard White and Amy Goodman on Wake Up Call. You might do the same. It's great.
And this is radio station WBAI in New York. Time once again for Off the Hook. Several weeks ago, we regrettably were unable to hear an entire dramatic production that we had started playing on this particular radio show, which is Off the Hook, here at every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock here on radio station WBAI in New York. And, of course, we regret all the people who were inconvenienced by the fact that we had to cut off the dramatic presentation so soon, so early. And for that reason, tonight, we are proud and privileged to present in its entirety the entire dramatic production all over again. Live via telephone. This production, which was pre-recorded, has to do with the future arrival of the brand new area code known as 646. Stay tuned. This is not appropriate for young children.
Thank you for calling Bell Atlantic. If you're wondering about Manhattan's new 646 area code, you've come to the right place.
Oh, great. Another new area code.
And I'm sure you've got an opinion about it.
Absolutely. Why in tarnation would I want a new area code for Manhattan?
Well, you were against microwave ovens at first, too.
Wasn't 212 good enough? Is there something more magical about 646?
And you started out hating answering machines.
They were different.
How so?
I don't know. They were just different.
But once you realized you needed them, you got used to them. You didn't want a garbage disposal at first, either.
Manhattan got along just fine without them.
Exactly my point.
Which would be what?
We got along fine for years with one area code, but now we need more phone numbers. 212 is just about tapped out. By having two area codes, we won't have to carve up the place like some giant pizza.
I'll have to change my number, I suppose.
No. If you already have a 212 number, and just about everyone in Manhattan does, you'll keep it.
It will probably cost more to call a 646 number.
No, again. Calling 646 from 212 will cost the same as if you're calling from a 212 number, and vice versa. In fact, no matter where you're calling from, a 646 call will be the same as calling 212.
There will still be a difference.
Name one.
Well, let's say I have a 212 number and I call your 646 number.
So?
I'll have to dial 1-646 before your number.
Right. You'd dial the area code, just like you would if you were calling someone in Brooklyn, you'd dial 718. Big deal.
But how will I know what area code to dial?
How do you know what their number is?
I ask.
So ask. When you ask for someone's number, they'll tell you. 212-646-718-516, whatever.
Oh, this all reminds me of something Mark Twain said.
He said a lot of things.
Fighting progress is like fighting the sunrise.
He's a tough act to follow.
Bell Atlantic will introduce the 646 area code in Manhattan. If you currently have a 212 number, your number will remain the same. Manhattan customers requesting new service or additional lines will be assigned either a 212 or 646 number depending on availability. There are no additional costs associated with dialing a 646 number. Check your Bell Atlantic extras, the brochures that come in your bill, for more information. And thank you for choosing Bell Atlantic.
And, of course, if you want to personally catch that production before it closes, give a call to 1-800-322-3551 and experience the thrill of the first time you heard the 646 vignette. It's not so much fun in other cities where they've changed area codes. Here's a letter from Boston. What's going on, guys? The customer service wait in the 978 area is disgusting. Not exactly the word he used. 978. Ooh. Now they just added a new area code in the Boston area. And now when we dial 411 and it's a good 20-second wait before I hear that big man's voice. And I get the what city, please, and all that. So 978, there's problems there. Bernie S., you're with us.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Have you heard of 978 before?
That's a new one on me.
That's a new one on me, too.
Sounds like they're running out of numbers.
You know, they should start using letters or something. I don't know. They weren't counting on this. You notice how so much of the problems that we face now is because people didn't think ahead? You know, or the 2,000-year bug? People didn't think, hey, maybe years won't be, just two digits? You know, especially when you invent something in, like, the 70s and 80s. You know, it's like we're never going to make it to past 9-9. Really, really silly. And this whole phone number fiasco is a whole other thing, too. So I can't believe people didn't plan in advance. Okay, we have a couple of other letters here. Bernie, maybe you can help us with this one, because this is kind of like a puzzle. You good with puzzles?
Depends on the puzzle.
All right, well, this is like a family type of situation. All right. A 12-year-old calls my son. This is a letter to us.
Is this one of these things where there's all these relatives involved?
Well, no, there is no one right answer, though. I can tell you that. You know, there's no one right answer. There's many different ways of looking at the same problem.
Okay.
So we won't be grading you based on the, your particular solution. All right. A 12-year-old calls my son And somehow the calls all appeared on my bill as calls made from our phone. I answered the phone myself many times, and they were just normal calls. The phone company said there is no way he could transfer charges like that, being only 12 years old. The AT&T operator checked, and there were no charges on his account. It's kind of cool how they can just do that, check someone else's account like that. Over $100 this bill, maybe more next month. The kid's father says he doesn't let him make long-distance calls. I was going to ask you over the air, but I've been out, so I wrote instead. So, any ideas?
What kind of bills are showing up on her What kind of charges are showing up on her bill?
How do you know it's a her? I assumed it was a him.
Or a him.
No, you could be right. It could be a her. I could have gotten this all wrong.
The person who wrote you.
Oh, it's interesting that you assumed there was a her and I assumed it was a him. I think that says a lot about us.
Maybe.
Well, anyway, regardless about that. Okay, so I don't know. I've read you everything that I have. So, apparently it's AT&T because they contacted the AT&T operator and there weren't any charges on their account from AT&T. Maybe the guy made MCI calls, but I would imagine that the calls showed up on this person's bill as an AT&T a call. Otherwise, he wouldn't have called, or she wouldn't have called AT&T operators.
Well, that makes sense. So can we assume then that these charges are showing up on this person's bill at the same time that this 12-year-old is calling that number?
Well, that's the other thing. This person is assuming that this 12-year-old is billing the calls the exact same time that they're picking up the phone and saying hello. So they say hello. Maybe that's a normal call. Maybe it's some other time where this 12-year-old is doing something weird and figuring out a way to bill it to the other person.
How do they know that the person is this 12-year-old calling the person who wrote you, or is it 12-year-old? No, 12-year-old is calling.
The 12-year-old is calling the son of the parent who is writing to us.
I think the son needs a good questioning.
I think the son is in on it.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think the son is probably just making the calls and saying that his friend made them.
But how could the son be making calls? Oh, I see what you're saying. You think the 12-year-old is calling the son, and the son is just simply calling him back?
Yeah, or it's like one of these one ring things or something. I'll call you back, or at a certain time. I think the son is definitely in on it, and needs to be questioned.
Yeah, that could be. I hate to think what we're setting up here, but I mean, I don't see any other way around it. You gotta lean on the kid because he knows something. He knows something, and you gotta get it out of him.
They could beat it out of him.
Well, no, I wouldn't suggest that. But what I would suggest, well, actually, they don't sell these anymore, but the Radio Shack pen register things, that would be perfect for a situation like
this.
Oh,
that's a great thing. There are other companies
that sell. You see it go off, and you run into the kid's room, and you say, aha, you just dialed this number, didn't you?
That was the best thing. I've always wondered why Radio Shack took that off the market about 6 months after they sold it.
It was because of federal pressure, I presume.
That's what I always assumed, because it was such a powerful tool.
But, Bernie, why would the feds not want us to know what numbers we're dialing?
Well, I think they were afraid people were going to use it surreptitiously on all kinds of things, like they do all the time.
Yeah,
they don't want any competition. But what this device was, for callers who aren't familiar with the pen register, was a little thing about the size of a desk calculator, even smaller, that would print out on a paper tape all the phone numbers that you dialed from a particular number. You just plug this thing like a phone. You could conceal it in a closet or a basement or something, or outside in a sealed weatherproof box. And it ran on batteries, too many batteries as I remember, or plugged in the wall. And it would just print out all the numbers you dialed, the time and date that you made the calls. It would give you the time and date of calls that were incoming, tell you how long the call was, print out any touch tones or other digits that you dialed during the call, complete with pauses. It was great. Mm-hmm. And you could just print out, you know, yards and yards of this paper tape as far as what was going on. You could get a very good picture of what was happening on the phone line. There are other companies that sell such a thing, but this was like $100. It was a great, great gadget.
Don't they have similar devices, though, that now go directly into computers?
Yes. In fact, there's shareware out there that lets certain modems keep track of your what's going on your phone line. In fact, this device that was touted as being able to save you money on long distance, the Phone Miser, which you can now buy for $50, can be you can write software for it pretty easily. I did, that lets you just use this thing as a computer-based pen register. It will keep track of all the outgoing phone calls on your phone line for this $50 device. It just stores it in a text file.
That kind of a device would definitely help this parent here, who is obviously trying to figure out just what tarnation is going on the phone line.
Yep.
You know, there's a possibility of all different kinds of phone companies being used. Maybe this 12-year-old was calling using MCI, and you assumed it was AT&T because your son is using AT&T to call them back. You know, it's entirely possible. And the other thing, you know, I don't know if Star 69 works coast to coast. You know, if somebody calls you from California, can you Star 69 them? I'm not sure.
It can.
Okay, well, if it does work, that might be what the person is dialing. And if that's the case, that wouldn't show up in the pen register now, would it?
Yeah, sure it would.
Well, you just see Star 69 show up because that's what they dial. You wouldn't see the number that actually went through.
Oh, not on a pen register, but it would show up on the bill.
It would show up in the bill, right. But
yeah.
They're not having problems reading the bill. They're having problems figuring out when these calls are happening and why. So,
This is a parental thing.
It's a parental thing. You know, you gotta control your kids out there. I mean, they're running crazy on the phone lines. So, I don't know. All right, here's another puzzle. That was a good answer, by the way, Bernie.
Well, it was a guess.
Well, it was a good answer, regardless. we'll get back to you with your score later. I have a problem that I hope you can solve. I have been getting a strange set of phone calls on my house line for a few days now, and they all go the same way. The answering machine picks up. There's a pause. Two rings. A pickup. Then a pre-recorded voice says, "If you want to make a phone call, hang up and try again." Then it repeats the message. I have caller ID and it reads out no data when this call comes in. I am not at the point yet of being annoyed, but I am very curious as to how they are doing this. Do you have any ideas on how they are doing this and how can I stop it from happening? I live in central New Jersey and use Bell Atlantic. Well, I have a pretty good theory, but I imagine, Bernie, you will probably have the same theory, so why don't you go first?
It sounds like his answering machine sounds like the person calling, leaving, or trying to leave messages, or not leaving messages, is hanging up right away, and their answering machine is just not hanging up soon enough and keeping the line past the point where, supervision tells it that the other person is hung up.
Yeah, most answering machines will figure out pretty quickly when someone has hung up, but sometimes, you know, it misses a few times. And some answering machines miss all the time.
And this may be one of them. And then after a while, it starts recording the telco message that you got to hang up your phone.
And then you get that off hook tone.
The screamer.
Yeah, we all know what it sounds like. Like that.
That's it.
How did I do that? But what you might want to try, if you're really interested in pursuing this, is just pick up the phone and leave it off the hook, and just listen to the dial tone go away. And then after the dial tone goes away, I'll bet you'll get two rings and you'll get the exact same recording. And that tells you that that's what's happening when the answering machine records that. Now, why are they always getting no data when the call comes in? That I'm not sure about. I'm not sure exactly how this is happening. It's possible that you have some sort of a three-way situation where your phone is ringing back to you, in which case you would get no data. And if there's nobody on the line, then, you know, you'll get that recording.
If their answering machine is set to answer on the first ring.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Caller ID data doesn't get sent until the first complete ring.
The beginning of the second ring, actually. Ring. Right.
What's that?
The beginning of the second ring is when it gets sent.
Is that? I thought it was between the first and the, between the first full one and the beginning of the second one.
Well, that's before the second one.
Okay.
Yeah, we're more or less saying the same thing. So that is true. So that might be happening. It's also possible your caller ID device, wherever that might be malfunctioning. I had one of those ones that just, it would get garbled data lots of times. So there's all kinds of possible reasons. But, you know, I don't think anything really bad is happening. I think you should count your blessings that you don't have some 12-year-old calling your son, if you have a son, and figuring out ways to make your phone bill skyrocket. Speaking of skyrocketing phone bills, or supposedly not skyrocketing, I got mail from the Binary Brothers. Have you seen this one, Bernie?
No.
The Binary Brothers. They sent mail to everybody, apparently, in New York. They're from Lancaster, Texas. I just found that out right now. They have a dime line guarantee. All right. Now, this is the first one I've ever seen. You know the whole, 10-cent a minute things that they send to everybody saying, just dial this carrier access code. Well, this is the first one I've ever seen a 7-digit carrier access code. Just dial 1010811. It's getting pretty silly now. I mean, that's as long as a phone, a regular phone number now.
So they all start with 1010 now for the time being?
Yes, for the time being, until they run out of those, and then they're going to do 1011, I guess, or something like that. 1010-811 plus 1 plus area code plus the number you wish to call. And they do this with a straight face. You know, I just think it's pretty humorous. So now here's their deal. If for any reason you are ever charged more than 10 cents a minute using the Dime Line registered trademark service...
This is any time.
Yes, any time.
Day or night.
There is no time when this call rate is not in effect, all right? You want me to say it that way? I'll say it that way.
I'm trying to do it like they do it on the MCI commercial.
Yeah. Is that any... No, it's an MCI? I thought that was Sprint.
I thought it was MCI.
You see, advertising is lost to me. I don't know who's who.
Sprint
is like Mary Tyler Moore or whatever that is. Yeah, okay. I got it.
Candace Bergen.
Yeah, that's her. Whatever. If for any reason you are ever charged more than 10 cents a minute using the Dime Line service for calls within the U.S. of 3 minutes or longer, now that's where my red flags went off. Okay. That tells me right away, minimum of 3 minutes per call. Mm-hmm. So that means every call costs you at least 30 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
Or... If you ever pay more than 7 cents a minute for calls of 3 minutes or longer within the state of New York, Vartech Telecom will refund to you the entire cost of the affected call. that's quite a statement there. But, I mean, that could be like up to like a dollar or something. So if you want more information on them, call 1-800-544-1510.
If it's true, it doesn't sound like too bad a deal.
Well, no, it doesn't. But you know, AT&T also has a deal now where you pay 10 cents a minute around the clock for a monthly fee of something like $3. Maybe it's $3.50. And in addition to that, they finally have addressed one of our pet peeves, which is the surcharges on the calling cards. You might have seen these commercials where they say, boy, does it make any sense for you to be out there using your calling card and have to pay an extra dollar just for the privilege of using it? I'm like... No, it doesn't make any sense, and you guys were the biggest offenders, and now you're talking like you never did it. But anyway, so they at least are using that as a marketing gimmick now, and they only charge 25 cents a minute, no surcharge, but you have to pay an extra buck on top of the $3.50 to get that service.
That advantage may disappear real soon now that the payphones are now deregulated, and do they have to, or they're allowed to now charge for 800 calls?
Yeah, the 35-cent charge for 800 numbers, which I think is preposterous, ridiculous, and insane. And I don't know how that ever came about, but if people keep complaining, hopefully it'll go away at some point.
The payphone providers were arguing that the phones were being used for free, and they weren't being compensated for the use of those phones when people were calling an 800 number to use their calling card services. And they've got a point. I mean, people are using their phones all the time for free, and that's wear and tear. But 35 cents? Come on.
No, it's not right. And it makes people afraid to make phone calls. Which I don't know why they want to do that to people. Let me just read a couple more things on the Dime Line here, then we'll move on.
Sounds like a snitch line or something when you're calling it the Dime Line.
Well, now
drop a dime on somebody.
Here's the other thing, which is really enough to drive people into a screaming frenzy. And now, this is the latest thing. Dime Line offers 5 cent a minute long distance calling. 5 cents a minute long distance calling for every other U.S. call of 10 minutes or less.
Every other?
No.
So I make like really short calls every other call.
Wait a minute. Now you have to keep track of which call gives you the 5 cents a minute and like, you know, make like a bogus call to like offset that and then make the one that you want to have 5 cents a minute. How in the world are people supposed to know what call is 5 cents a minute and what call is twice the price and 10 minutes or less? So you can't really start. As soon as you start saving big money, they cut you off or they say no more. And what happens if your call goes 11 minutes? Do you pay 10 cents a minute or you pay 5 cents a minute for the first 10 minutes and then 10 cents a minute? I mean...
Is this AT&T?
No, this is the Dime Line people.
Oh, the Dime Line. Okay,
so,
this is the New York people. Okay.
Anyway, as far as the fine print, that wasn't even the fine print. That was the big print. That's confusing enough. Calls are subject to a 3-minute minimum, 15, 21, or 30 cents as applicable per call, and a $5 monthly access fee. AT&T, MCI, and Sprint rates shown above are based on interstate calls made between 293 and 430 miles with a customer's average monthly usage between $10 and $24.99 a month. MCI rates assume 20% of the calls are made within MCI calling circles. Rate comparisons are based upon AT&T, MCI, and Sprint's weekday rates in effect as of September 15th, 1997. All right, with that out of the way, I don't know. 1-0-1-0-8-1-1. Give it a shot.
I think eventually, as these rates continue to drop, it'll become more costly for them to keep track of this billing stuff than it is to than it's worth, and they'll just probably just structure it like if you can make up to so many hours worth of calls for a flat rate of blah, then the next tier of usage is blah.
Right.
It's kind of like they price other telecom services.
I remember last year at this time we were talking about the 10-cent a minute rate and how it seemed to be almost like, the standard or what people were shooting for. And now it's dipping below that, as it should. And, maybe we'll see even more reasonable rates someday where people aren't, afraid to make phone calls. I have to use calculators to figure out what company to use.
Eventually, I think it'll just be a flat rate kind of thing.
What I'd like to try this. I'm not sure. Hopefully, I won't lose you. I want to try calling 1-0-1-0-8-1-1 and see what kind of message you get on their carrier access confirmation number.
You usually lose me when you try something like this.
Yeah, I realize that. But, it's worth the risk if we get a cool recording. And if we do lose you, we'll call you right back.
Okay.
On. We have dialed in? Okay, we do. 1-0-1-0-8-1-1. And then we'll dial the 700 number. That confirms your long-distance carrier. Quiet on the set here.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed. Please check the number and dial again.
Well, that wasn't what we wanted to hear, was it?
No.
Okay, well, I got rid of it, and I didn't get rid of you.
If I were calling from prison, I would have gotten knocked off then.
That's true. So, don't try that with somebody from prison on the phone. Speaking of prison.
Don't even speak of it.
Well, I'm afraid we have to because Kevin Mitnick is still there.
Boy, that's horrendous.
He is scheduled.
He hasn't even had a trial yet. He's been locked up for what, 3 years now?
Over 3 years. He is scheduled to have a hearing next Monday, the 30th, I believe, of March. Now, we have this very important announcement to pass along to people. And that concerns the need of a computer expert witness. Computer expert is needed immediately to testify as an expert witness in an ongoing criminal matter in federal district court in Los Angeles. Kevin Mitnick is seeking a highly credentialed expert in computer security, telecommunications, system, and network administration to testify in this highly publicized computer hacking case. This will be a groundbreaking case and is expected to attract significant media coverage. Testimony will be required as early as March 30th, next Monday, in Los Angeles. Further testimony will be needed at trial later this year. And, of course, expert witness fees will be paid by the federal court. And, of course, I realize people in New York might not be able to, participate in this since it's taking place in Los Angeles. But I know we have listeners in Los Angeles and other parts of the country via Real Audio that might be able to help out here. Qualified candidates must have an advanced degree and be knowledgeable in DOS Windows 3.11. It's amazing. He's been in prison so long, they don't even mention Windows. They don't even mention Windows 95. That's how long he's been in prison.
I didn't know you could get an advanced degree in Windows 3.11.
You'd be amazed what you can do. Unix, specifically SunOS and Solaris, VAX VMS, and Internet operations. Experience with cellular telephone networks is a plus. Previous expert testimony and or publication are preferred. Qualified candidates should contact Mr. Mitnick through his appointed defense counsel, who is Donald Randolph. And the phone number there is area code 310-395-7900. Or you can write to him, but you better, overnight it if you want to help out before the 30th. The address, Donald Randolph, that's Randolph, R-A-N-D-O-L-P-H, Randolph and Levanas, 1717 4th Street, 3rd floor, Santa Monica, California, 90401-3319. Or if you want to send email, the email address is randallv, that's R-A-N-D-L-E-V, at worldnet.att.net. And Bernie, you had experience trying to get an expert witness. It didn't quite work out, though, right?
No, it turns out it wasn't necessary because I didn't end up going to trial, unfortunately. As much as I would have liked to, it didn't look like it was going to be a fair one anyway, as these usually don't turn out to be fair trials. One thing I should point out, anybody who's thinking about doing this, it'd be very helpful. However, the person who does this has to be beyond a shadow of a doubt 100% credible. If you've ever had any conviction for, for any anything misdemeanor like, or
if you've ever smoked anything or fondled somebody or God knows what else that they're going to bring up,
they will bring that up. The government will try to tear your complete testimony down by attacking your credibility. It has nothing to do with how qualified you are to speak on the subject. They'll try to attack that too, but more importantly, they'll try to attack your credibility. Credibility is everything, and they'll drag up stuff from, they interviewed 20 people who knew me, trying to get somebody to say, that I was dangerous or something, and they couldn't come up with any way to do that, but they will try very hard to do that. So if you have any skeletons in your closet, don't even think of doing this. You'd be wasting Mr. Mitnick's lawyer's time, which would be very bad.
What if the person just is in the hacker community? Should everybody in the hacker community just assume that they just won't be able to do this?
Well, it depends how involved you are with the hacker community. If it's something the government could bring up, like, are you involved in the hacker community? They have to define what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you've ever written an article for 2600 Magazine, that would probably be used against you to attack your credibility.
Yeah, you'd be on the blacklist, I guess.
Yep.
That's sad.
An uninformed jury was like, this guy is sympathetic to hackers and has written articles for a hacker magazine, which the government will equate with a criminal magazine, unfair as that is.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to be Lily White to Lily White and very boring to qualify as an expert witness.
Uh-huh. That sounds insane, but yes, what you say is definitely the truth, because think of what you are doing. You are speaking before a judge, you are speaking before a jury, and people who believe the kinds of things they see on Inside Edition. So you have to keep that in mind. You're not talking to people on WBAI. I wish we could be the people, the peers that try Kevin Mitnick.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, because we'd be moving on to trying some other people pretty quickly, I can tell you that right now. Now, here's a letter from somebody who's looking to be on trial pretty soon. Dear Off the Hook, I admire what you're able to do. I would really appreciate it if you could do something to expose the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a.k.a. Mormons. From everything I know, they're among the most abusive groups in power in the U.S. They've achieved a state of invulnerability by owning the state of Utah. They have sold this state to be the greatest U.S. depository of toxic waste, and the citizens of Utah pay for it with their health. If you question any of this, please study anything you can about Tuelle. That's T-O-E-L-L-E. Although he says he's not sure about that spelling. But it's the location of all the toxic dumps in Utah, the town that the Mormon Church has sold out as the biggest toxic waste dump in America. And he would like us to hack their website and get these facts out there. Well, I don't know. I can't advise people to go around hacking websites, and I certainly can't dispatch a crew of people to do this for you. But what I will say is that I don't think very many people have a problem with getting a political message out, especially if it's something that's being suppressed, and using whatever means you need to do. And that involves, painting on the side of a building, something as horrible as that, or, dropping leaflets out of an airplane or something, or even, taking a publicly available web page, using a security vulnerability to transmit a message exactly the opposite of what the people that you are opposing would want to say. That, to me, is a form of speech. But, it quickly evolves beyond speech if you go around destroying computer systems, erasing files, causing other kinds of mayhem. So it's a very fine line. A lot of people don't know when to, when to stop. And that's why people get into, lots and lots of trouble sometimes. The people in East Timor who have been hacking the Indonesian websites there have gotten a lot of publicity for it, have gotten a lot of attention to what's going on in that part of the world, to the torture and suppression of people. And that would not be happening if they weren't taking these actions. So, on the one hand, we can condemn this kind of thing, but on the other hand, maybe it's the only way to get the word out on something that's important, to get the issues addressed. One of the best websites that I ever saw hacked was a fur company that was hacked by anti-fur activists. And I can think of very few people that would not admire that kind of guts, to go out there and get the message out on your biggest enemy's dime, They basically were transmitting all this anti-fur literature for a good 12 hours or so. And I think that's one of the ones that's up on our website. So if you wanted to look at that, feel free. But again, we can't advise you to do this. All we can do is say, what we believe is speech, what we believe is vandalism, and how you may be treated by certain people who we really don't have a say in. Make sense, Bernie?
Makes perfect sense to me. Just be careful.
Yeah, you got to be really careful with these things, because you're dealing with people who are probably a lot more powerful than you are. Almost definitely.
They carry guns.
Yeah.
They point them at you.
One final thing having to do with hackers and the Pentagon, things like that. This is from the Associated Press. Prime Minister... Although this is interesting. I think you saw this, Bernie. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today praised an 18-year-old Israeli master hacker accused of having launched the most organized attack ever on the Pentagon's computer system. This is a guy who right away has done more than Kevin Mitnick ever did, and you have the Prime Minister of Israel standing up and saying, good job. In fact, his exact words were, damn good. Netanyahu said this when he was asked what he thought of the hacker who was put under house arrest Wednesday, had his computer taken away.
He wasn't charged with anything.
And then Netanyahu quickly added, very dangerous, too. The suspect, who calls himself the Analyzer and has been identified by the U.S. Justice Department as Ehud Tenenbaum, was questioned by a special police anti-hacker unit. The suspect allegedly is cooperating with investigators who don't think he was seeking personal gain. This guy didn't act for what we call criminal motives, only for his curiosity, his ego, or any other motive, not for money. He's not so proud now of what he's done. The Pentagon has said the intrusions appear to have been aimed at systems that contained unclassified personnel and payroll records. A spokesman described the Israeli hacker's work as the most organized and systematic attack the Pentagon has seen to date. The Analyzer and two teams from Cloverdale, California, apparently penetrated computers in February using a weakness that already had been identified by computer security teams. The Analyzer was arrested along with two Israeli friends from the neighborhood at the request of U.S. officials. He has not been charged. He was not surprised because the story was allegedly in the press, already in the press, that is, and he knew that someday somebody would knock on his door. He's described by his high school principal as a high achiever, the principal says, we are sorry about what happened. On the other hand, he didn't exploit this for a bad cause.
Since when does that keep you out of jail?
Well, you know, maybe this is like, you know, some sort of a trend that they're actually... I mean, we had the Croatian hackers of last year where their principal said pretty much the same thing. Now you have Israeli principals saying the same thing, and prime ministers, you know, saying that this person is not a criminal. Why can't we have that in this country? Why are we locking people up who we could be learning so much from? People who did not steal money, people who did not have any criminal motives, who didn't profit in any way. And, you know, look around with the Kevin Mitnick case and find one person who said that he profited in any way. Not even the prosecutors are saying this. So what is the big difference here? What is going to happen? Is Israel going to fall apart now because they didn't imprison this hacker for 3 years without a trial? Or are they maybe going to learn something from this guy and you know, get ahead a little bit?
I'll bet you a week's salary, Emmanuel, that this kid will not be extradited to the U.S. to face charges.
No, I think he has friends in powerful places, and I'd say having the Israeli prime minister come out on your side is probably, you know, a good thing for him anyway. It would be nice, you know, if somebody had access to maybe Benjamin Netanyahu's phone number, that we'd call him and say, what do you think about Kevin Mitnick then? You know, this is a guy that did so-and-so, who didn't profit in any way. Would you say that, you know, he's damn good too?
Is Kevin Mitnick Jewish?
I don't like to comment on people's religious beliefs or backgrounds, but I'm not sure. I think he could be.
It could help.
But I don't know if that's going to do any good for anybody. I really don't.
If he was an Israeli, and he did it from Israel,
uh-huh,
he'd probably still be there and he wouldn't be in jail.
Well, that's certainly true. But you can say what if, you know, all day long. It doesn't change the current situation, and the current situation is pretty bad. Remind me to give out that information a little later on, too, about, you know, people who want to be expert witnesses or who want to ask more information about that. We'll do that at the end of the show. Also, if you just want to go to the webpage, www.2600.com/Kevin, you can see a printed transcript of that. Now, Bernie, yes, we have the Micro Broadcasting Convention coming up in 2 weeks. Actually, we have, before that comes up, we have the Science Fiction Convention at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. There'll be some hacker panels there, I think on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's coming up right now. I don't have their website handy. I don't know what it is, but if you're any good at all, you can get on Alta Vista and find it. It takes place at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, which is on Long Island, and they have an annual science fiction convention called ICON, where they talk to all kinds of weird people, and hackers just happen to be one of them. Mm-hmm. So,
do people dress up in strange costumes at this con?
You wouldn't believe some of the things you see wandering around. I mean, people with long capes and canes and things like that, you know. Literally people from other planets. Hopefully we'll see people at that, but the week after is the Microbroadcasting Convention in Philadelphia, so give us an update on that.
Well, microbroadcasters are what is the term that's been used to describe a pirate radio broadcasters, people who don't believe that they should have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to get on the FM band and voice their opinion or play the kind of music they want to play. Since corporate powers have pretty much taken over, or have totally taken over the FM broadcast band, there's no diversity of opinion or taste, for that matter. So some people have taken it upon themselves to set up very low power stations, like 10 watts, 20 watts, that sort of thing, which don't pose any threat to anyone, despite what the FCC might say. And there's a lot of controversy about this now. The FCC is trying to shut these stations down. A couple weeks ago, they tried to shut down Steelless Radio in New York.
Now, that's interesting because I had heard that they had gotten a cease and desist order. And, in fact, when I tried listening to them over the weekend, I did not hear them. So I'm not sure if they were, in fact, taken off the air.
They are. They were not physically taken off the air. They voluntarily shut down to reevaluate their options.
So they're not on right now.
I don't know if they're on right now. I don't live in New York, so I can't tell.
Right.
I knew that they voluntarily switched off their transmitter and decided about whether they were going to move to another location in New York or possibly change frequencies. They're trying to the whole thing about micro broadcasters is you want to be ethical about it. You don't want to interfere with any other licensed station.
Absolutely right.
And that was what the FCC was apparently claiming. But that might have been an empty claim. They've been known to make empty claims before.
Well, they've actually gone so far as to claim that people broadcasting on the FM band, I'm talking about, you know, like 92, you know, megahertz there, are somehow interfering with airplanes. Now, how can that be?
Well, the FM broadcast band covers from 88 to 108 megahertz. Those numbers on your dial are not arbitrary numbers. They actually mean something. Just above the 108 megahertz frequency, or just a few megahertz above that, is the band that aircraft use to communicate with their the towers. And I think that starts at about 113 or 116 megahertz and goes up to 130 some megahertz.
Right. I can see if you broadcast over there, you could interfere with airplanes. So how do you interfere with them in the commercial band?
If you had a really very poorly designed transmitter that had a lot of what's called splatter, if it was overmodulating and operating out of frequency, conceivably that's possible. But it's very unlikely. If you have a decent transmitter like the ones that Radio Free Berkeley sells kits for, it's a good place to get a transmitter, Radio Free Berkeley. They sell good kits.
Actually, it's Free Radio Berkeley.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Free Radio Berkeley,
yeah.
Thank you. They have well-designed transmitters. Or if you conscientiously design a transmitter or have someone who knows what they're doing design one for you, you will not interfere with aircraft communication. Mm-hmm. Every time they say that that's been going on, they fail to offer any kind of forensic evidence that was really happening. So it's just a boogeyman kind of scare tactic.
Now, you know, I had heard something, though, from the FCC, and this is from a publication called Radio World, that the FCC is actually considering licensing some of these low-power stations. And The thing that I've seen, though, is that they're thinking of making it no more than a single watt.
1 watt.
Now, how in the world, I mean, that would get you about a block, wouldn't it?
If you had a really efficient antenna, and no doubt there will also be restrictions on what kind of antenna you can have as well, you might get 2 or 3 blocks if you were lucky.
That's like licensing somebody to shout out their window.
You could probably do better with a megaphone out your window. In fact, you definitely could do better with a megaphone out your window.
Well, that just goes to show. That just goes to show that this is definitely an issue. This is something the FCC is talking about, so it's gotten attention.
Yeah, that's a red herring bone that they're throwing out to just try to appear that they're being conciliatory towards the free radio movement.
Right.
A lot of people involved with this movement are converging in Philadelphia weekend after next, starting Friday night, April 3rd, for the first East Coast Microbroadcasters Conference. There was one some time ago on the West Coast, and it was very well attended.
Uh-huh.
Here in Philadelphia, we're hoping to have the Chief of Compliance and Enforcement of the Federal Communications, Mr. Richard Lee, who has offered to attend the panel discussion entitled The Bust, What to Do When the FCC Comes A-Knockin'. And he would like to expand upon his opinions as far as what's illegal and what you shouldn't do. And we're planning to, if we can get this guy to come, which he's offered to come, we're just trying to work out an agreement so he doesn't come in an enforcement role. And if he agrees to this, we'll have some other people to rebut his statements from both a legal standpoint with a lawyer from the ACLU who was also very involved with successfully fighting the Communications Decency Act, and also a station engineer who could rebut these inevitable public safety claims that are always brought up by the FCC, saying that pirate radio stations are dangerous and will cause airplanes to fall out of the sky, which has never happened, by the way. So it should be quite interesting. It will be broadcast live in Philadelphia at 91.3 megahertz.
But we have yet to get this on the net, and that's something I was hoping people tonight might be able to help out with.
Mm-hmm.
If we can figure out a way to have this whole conference broadcast over the internet, that would be really, really cool and interesting. And is there somebody that maybe they should contact if they have an idea as to how they might be able to help out?
Sure, you could call our conference information line. That's area code 215-474-3386, or send us email at WPPR, that's West Philly Pirate Radio, at svaha.com, svaha.com. The phone number again is 215-474-3386, and the email address is wppr@svaha.com.
And if that shot by too fast for you, if you can find a pen and time, you can always write to us at offthehook, O-T-H, at 2600.com, and we'll forward it to the appropriate people. We want to take some phone calls because we're running out of time. We really have a lot to talk about tonight. 212-279-3400 is our telephone number, as always, and we welcome calls from all around the planet because we're broadcast over the internet as well as over 99.5 FM in New York City. We are more powerful than pirate radio.
Very much more powerful.
It's incredible.
Radio Mutiny here in Philadelphia is a mere 20 watts, which covers a part of the city,
mm-hmm.
but not outside that, and we don't interfere with any licensed stations.
But the amazing thing is that here at BAI, we are just as powerful as all those, mean, nasty commercial stations that pump out, music all the time and don't really care about anybody. We're just as powerful as they are, and we get to just as many, places as they do. And I think the people who listen, listen a lot more intently, that's what's important with radio is whether you actually listen or whether you just have it on in the background, that's the big difference. All right, let's see if we can get some phone calls squeezed in. 212-279-3400. We have Bernie S. on the line. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah. Let me ask you. Have you seen these new intercom systems that people are getting in their apartment houses, whether they like it or not, which use the phone lines like a little PBX system?
Okay, let me stop you right there. Those are not new. They've had those in California for ages. They are the dumbest thing I think I've ever seen. Somebody called me once, right, and their phone number had been forwarded to me by some evil person. And they were asking that when the phone rings, could I please hit 7 to let the UPS man in? Imagine this. I'm in a different city, and I'm letting the UPS man into their apartment.
Well, that's weird. That's weirder than mine. But what gets me is this thing was popularized just in time to throw you off the Internet whenever you have a half-decent connection. And apparently, now I went to the phone company. They said it's not their problem. I went to the Public Service Commission. It's not their problem. I don't know whose problem it is.
How did they find out your phone number?
Well, it has nothing to do with your phone number. The way this system works is that there's a panel in the lobby of my building, and in order to ring my doorbell or ring the phone, you punch in a number, but it's not my phone number. It's just a series of digits, right? Like 1234 or something like that. And then it'll ring the phone in a distinctive way. It uses that European dual ring business.
Okay.
And then I know that it's the doorbell, and I've got to, you know, make
but
a
at
touch
some
tone
point, it has to be hooked into your phone line.
Yes, it does.
Where is that?
It down in the basement where the box is. And they it's like a little PBX system. It overrides the phone line. So if you happen to be surfing the World Wide Web, they pull the plug on the ocean as soon as they ring the doorbell.
Who is running this system?
It's
not Bell Atlantic, is it?
No, it's a private thing. The landlord sticks on the building.
Well, I can tell you, sir, this is probably illegal as heck.
Well, actually, it's not. So far, I'm in New York City public housing, and they got some big deals for security systems, and they put this thing in the building. Nobody is responsible for this.
So you're telling me if you're talking to somebody on the phone, this thing's going to disconnect you?
Well, no, it'll override. It'll beep, and that's not a problem. But when you're on the net, it just chokes the modem right away.
So it doesn't actually disconnect, it just makes a noise?
Yeah, it'll interrupt the call and let you
talk. And
it
doesn't matter if you don't have call waiting, it's just going to do this anyway.
That's right, because it's like a PBX system.
Well, it's still something that has to be, licensed in some way, and the tenants have to approve of it. They can't just do this to you.
Yeah, they can do anything they want to you.
Without your permission, they cannot connect anything to your telephone line.
Well, guess what? I talked to NYNEX and Bell Atlantic and the Public Service Commission. Nobody's responsible for this, and I went round and round and round in circles.
Can you tell us, without giving out your address, obviously, where this is located?
Yeah, it's in Chinatown area.
Uh-huh.
And if you want off the air, I'll tell you where I'm at. You can come out and look at it and hack it.
What do the controls look like in the front of the building?
It's just a stainless steel panel. If you hold on a second, I can tell you who makes the thing.
Okay,
that
would be helpful.
I got the instruction sheet. But,
while he's looking that up, it sounds similar to one of these entry guard systems that I had in an apartment building I lived in. That was just simply an auto dialer. You just looked up a 3-digit code depending on the apartment.
Okay, hold on. I got it. It's the Centex Ovation System. The company's name is Centex, which I thought was pretty funny. And it's out of Chatsworth, California. I called them, and they said that there was no way the management... Well, there's apparently a way to program this system from some secure location. It may be that you could hack the system if you can get in through a phone number, but it may be, some secure line.
And what did they say? They said there's no way what?
Well, they said that there... Actually, what they said was that if I could get the management to change the system and ignore my setting, then it wouldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
So I said, I don't get that many guests. I don't want people ringing my doorbell.
Yeah, well,
they
if there's somebody coming up to the apartment and just, putting their hand on all the buttons at once, you disconnect everybody who's on the
line. Well, no, you'd have to, you have to ring a code. But, I mean, the fact is, if some dimwit wants to be let in at 3 in the morning, he can ring my phone, so I've got to turn the phone off at night now.
Uh-huh.
There's apparently nothing I can do about it, but I thought you guys would find this extremely amusing.
Oh, yeah, it's amusing and upsetting.
There is something you can do about it. There's a legal way you can do something about it, and then there's a way that gets around having to go through a lot of the legal hassles.
Which
that
is?
Just have an extra pair of wires run down to this thing from your place and have that connected instead of your phone line. Have that connected to this thing. And just put 48 volts across it, which is the voltage that the phone company generates on a phone line.
Right.
Then you can just throw an old phone, an old dial, whatever, an old touch-tone phone, throw that on there. And that'll just be a dedicated phone, not connected with any phone number.
Yeah, that's nice, except they won't do it. I mean, they've gone down in the basement, and they've got across my phone line, so this thing has control over it.
Well, they have illegally connected to your telephone line. There's just no way.
Who do I complain to? Nobody
complain to the phone company for one thing.
I
think the Public Service Commission would take an interest in this as well because they are tampering with phone lines.
They said that the landlord had precedence or something.
They
I
don't.
Talked to both
if
of
that,
these
If that doesn't work, I suggest going to an assemblyman or something that who will take this up, hopefully for political gain of their own.
I assume that it didn't work because it was New York City Housing Authority, and they have a lot of clout.
Well, if it's New York City Housing Authority, then there's all kinds of political implications for them doing this to people without their okay.
Well, that's how they pretty much treat the tenants in these buildings anyway. They basically make decisions, don't ask for any tenant input or token input, and then they just do what they damn please, and everybody can go, themselves.
Uh-huh.
I'd be willing to bet that there's a law in New York State that says, and it's part of the Public Utilities Commission stuff.
I wish I knew what it was. The PSC guys don't seem to know what it is.
That nobody can connect anything to your phone line without your permission.
Really? I always thought that. I said to the phone company, I am paying for service. I am not paying to have my doorbell rung by some idiot, or anybody else to throw me off the Internet or whatever.
Bernie, what do you think of this idea? Have a calling the FBI and saying that someone's doing an illegal wiretap.
you can do that.
One of our in-studio people
Or you could here's another trick you could do. You could have the phone company disconnect your line. Ask them to disconnect it temporarily, like you're going on vacation.
Right.
Then I don't recommend this, but this is something that would work. Then you could plug your phone line, disconnect all your phones from the, unplug all your phones, then plug your phone line right into the AC wall outlet, and it would fry their whole system.
I wouldn't suggest that either, but it's something that could happen if they're not careful.
That's an interesting thought.
So we wish you luck. We're going to try to move on to
get
another phone call.
I didn't suggest you do that, but that might work.
You never know.
All right, good luck. Let us know what happens, all right?
All right.
I don't believe what they're doing to some people out there. It's horrible. I mean, if somebody did that to me, I'd be beside myself with rage. But regardless, let's see if we can squeeze in two phone calls for the entire hour. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. I had a question regarding ADSL systems.
Okay.
And, hello? Good
evening. Yes, go ahead. But turn down your radio.
I'm sorry. Now, ADSL systems, they supposedly have the 2-mile range.
From the central office. That's what we're hearing to get the maximum throughput, yes.
Okay, so now one time I was talking to a 9X technician back when they were 9X, and they mentioned something about a device called a load pot, and what it was supposed to do was amplify the signal on your line to cut out line noise, like for runs over 2 miles.
Okay.
And I was wondering if there was any connection between the ADSL 2-mile range and perhaps the load pot's amplification.
I would imagine there's going to be something like that introduced, if that itself won't be the actual technology, because ADSL is fairly new in this country, and not everybody lives within 2 miles of a central office. They're going to have to do something to provide service to people outside that area. They'll need some sort of amplification. Whether or not it works efficiently, I don't know if it's too early to tell. Bernie, have you heard anything about this?
Well, these load pods don't really necessarily amplify the signals. I think it's a huge inductive loop in a potted can hanging off a pole or somewhere that compensates for the capacitive inductance, whatever, on the phone line that runs 2 miles or more. So it sort of makes the phone line appear electrically that it's shorter than it really is. But there's got to be some amplification somewhere in there too, but that's not what the load pod does. So that's all I know about
Okay. Listen, we're out of time. Thanks so much for calling. Hope that helped. And we want to give out that information on the expert witness for Kevin Mitnick one more time. If you're interested in being a part of that, first of all, if you didn't hear the whole little spiel there, connect to our website, www.2600.com/Kevin, and it'll give you the whole rundown there. People who are interested in being an expert witness, and it could be as early as next Monday, March 30th, when a hearing is scheduled, contact his lawyer, Donald Randolph, 310-395-7900, email address randallv@worldnet.att.net. Again, you can write to us, oth@2600.com, or if you're more traditional, you want to send us mail through the U.S. Postal Service, Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. Bernie S., thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you. Let me get that phone number in for the Pirate Radio Conference.
Yes,
2 weeks from now, 215-474-3386. It's going to be a really interesting 3-day weekend. We'll can even learn everything you need to know to set up your own pirate radio station.
And those of you interested in science fiction, come to the ICON convention this weekend at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. We don't have the exact web address, but if you just show up on campus anytime Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, you can't miss it. And there'll be all kinds of hackers there doing all kinds of things. So without further ado, that's it for this week. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Off the Hook. Till then, Emmanuel Goldstein, good night.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bond for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but Billy Bond.
Jericho, Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho and the walls.
Get on the bus for Jericho 98. On March 27th, join us in Washington to demand freedom and amnesty for all political prisoners in the United States. Bus tickets are now available in Harlem at Creative Visions 125 Mart and Liberation Books. Also in Manhattan at the Breck Forum, Revolution Books, the International Action Center, and Blackout Books. In Brooklyn at Sister's Place, and in Queens at D&J Bookstore in Laurelton. For reservations or information on Jericho 98, call area code 212-473-4257 or 212-330-8362. On to Jericho 98. Free all political prisoners. This has been a WBAI PSA on behalf of Jericho 98, a nonprofit organization.
The time now, exactly 9 p.m. Coming up next, Arab Voice, Crescent Rising with Barbara and Raziz. Stay tuned.
This is Barbara Nimri Aziz welcoming you to Arab Voices Crescent Rising on WBAI for Tuesday, March 24th. Arab Voices Crescent Rising is heard every week at this time from 9 to 10 p.m. on Tuesdays, where we look at the Arab and Muslim community here and abroad.